This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited out to make this Joycast possible.
For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
Welcome to The Fool and the Opera, the show where we like to play our old people music at young people volume. Thanks for joining me. I'm Dan Vaux and I am The Fool. There's a French saying that goes something along the lines of, you know, je ne joue pas l'idiot, je suis l'idiot, which basically means I do not play the fool, I am the fool. And that's very true in this case. Thanks to Beau for presenting his first episode of Gaze of Our Lives. You can catch Beau again tomorrow for Breakfast with Amy, the Beau and the Beautiful, so to speak. Coming up after my program is also Bent Notes. That's at 7 p.m, so stick around for that. It'll be worth it. During the show, I'd like you to participate, so please do send in your comments and feedback to SMS 0427 JOY949, email onair at joy.org.au, or you can give us a call, 9699 2949. Today, it's Icy Princesses, Butch Goddesses, and Stubborn Insomniacs. No, I'm not talking about Joy 94.9 presenters. I'm talking about the lineup for this week's show. Yep, listen to the chat with Cynthia McCreese and hear what she thinks about playing Turandot in Opera Queensland's production of Graham Murphy's Turandot. Hear the latest happenings at Victoria Opera, as well as have the chance to win a double pass to their Sing Your Own Opera holiday season production of The Messiah. Finally, it's the usual mixed bag of traditional opera, as well as contemporary reworkings and remixes. Plus, you get to find out today what our jazz opera pick for the week and American heavy metal band Manowar have in common. Yes, we'll be playing some heavy metal on the show today, as well as some folk. Definitely a mixed bag today. So that's all happening today on The Fool and the Opera. You're on Joy 94.9. You're on Joy 94.9. This is The Fool and the Opera with Dan Vaux. And you might have heard Andrew Bird there with Survey and a bit of backing up vocals from me. I'm sorry, I didn't realize the microphone was on, but I hope I was at least in tune, but I very much doubt it. Now, that was from the album Mysterious Production of Eggs. What rhymes with Valkyries? Well, I would have thought very little, but Bird does get away with things like vagaries and proclivities. So the man is so good, I'm sure he can find a rhyme for the word orange. The song references the Ride of the Valkyries and its violent use by the US military to motivate soldiers before they go to battle, and even sometimes during. A very bold example of this is in Francis Ford Coppola's film Apocalypse Now, which is set in during the Vietnam War. Helicopter gunships fly in formation with Wagner blaring from loudspeakers as they attack a village. Well, when Bird wrote his song, it wasn't helicopters, but it was Wagner blaring from tanks in Iraq. So it seems not a lot has changed there. In the book Musical Meaning, author Lawrence Kramer writes that the full force of the reference to Ride of the Valkyries is not clear to those who don't know the whole Ring cycle. Wagner's four operas, there's Das Rheingold, Das Die Valkyrie, Siegfried and Götterdämmerung. That's the best German accent I can do. The brutality and notions of racial triumph evoked by Coppola is clearer when you've seen the opera. So isn't that interesting? Bird makes more sense when you've seen Coppola, and Coppola makes more sense when you've seen Wagner. The abstract reveals itself to you, and while at the same time, the new interpretation adds to the old. So you kind of get this layer cake effect of meanings. And with each new reading, there's a new flavour rich with a new essence offered up. This too is also true of opera productions themselves. The meanings or moral emphasis of the story changes over time. Even the way that an opera is presented changes. Opera stagings now are bigger and better than ever before, and sometimes even more real than reality itself. Last week, for example, we talked about Robert Lepage's La Damnation de Faust with a giant screen, which giant touchscreen that responded to actors' movements, which meant that, you know, every dream and nightmare sort of came to life in front of your eyes. So you can imagine what will happen when Lepage takes on The Ring next year. In 2012, he'll take on a production of The Ring Cycle at the Met. And when he takes out his technical tools to reinterpret the mythological world of swinging Valkyries and angry dragons and nasty dwarves, it'll be quite amazing. Now, appealing to visual tastes of today isn't just about technology, though. Gone, too, are the days of a fat lady singing. American soprano Deborah Voigt had to slim down after being sacked from London's Covent Garden for being obese. After she lost 54 kilos, a fitter Voigt returned to the stage to great applause. Her singing was also improved as well, as she was able to expand her vocal technique, and she's now signed on as Brunhild for that very production of the Met's The Ring Cycle. So what if you can't make it to New York? Well, good news is, if you are in Melbourne, you might be able to see The Ring Cycle as well. We've heard news this week from Melbourne Symphony Orchestra and Victorian Opera that they're both currently in talks for a full staging of The Ring Cycle. So I'll keep you posted on details. Meanwhile, you can read the full report at the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. Well, all this talk of Wagner and The Ring, I couldn't resist but play an excerpt of one of my favourite recordings of The Valkyries, and I think you'll know what it is. It's not a particularly loud recording, so you'll have to just hush up a bit. Just shh, just very quiet, because you're on The Fool and the Opera.
Be very quiet, I'm hunting rabbits.
That was the rabbit.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was The Wabbit indeed. Now, if you think that could be the most bizarre thing I'll be doing today musically, think again. Here's some Roy Orbison. Now, while you're listening, see if you can pick the familiar tune that emerges from this song. You're on Joy 94.9. This is The Fool and the Opera, and that was Roy Orbison with A Love So Beautiful, with guitar by George Harrison. Now, I was told by a friend today that my music selection for this week is absolutely terrible, but in my defense, there is a Michael Bolton cover of that song, and I was tempted to play it, but for your sanity's sake, I decided not to. Now, did you pick the famous opera tune that Roy Orbison uses in his song? I'll give you a few hints. It's very popular with the soccer fans, or as my European friends like to say, it's football, and it's inextricably linked with the late, great Pavarotti. Yes, it's Nessun Dorma. And no, that's not a car. It's a great aria from the opera Turandot. Yes, that old tune. Did you pick it? Well, shall we have a listen to it again and sort of have a listen to the similarities and the differences? Yeah? Yeah? Why not? I'll play a little snippet back to you now, and after that, I'll give you another quirky take on that song as well. I won't tell you what it is. I'll just leave you hanging. Yeah? Well, what I will say is it's not the tragic duet between Michael Bolton and Pavarotti. What is it with Michael Bolton just doing all these terrible covers? Anyway, here's Orbison again.
Joy 94.9.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Just when you thought you'd heard it all, that was American heavy metal band Manowar with Nessun Dorma. I can't help but laugh every time I hear those, you know, those chords coming, those power chords. It's quite a bit of fun. I hope you're having fun as well. Let me know. 0427 Joy 949 is the SMS. On air at joy.org.au is the email, and 9699 2949 is the number. I've got a few SMSs that have come in. Thanks to Jonathan for your message, and thank you very much to Brett as well. What else have we got? We've got Greg Allen saying he remembers that Bugs Bunny clip. Yes, it is a very funny one. So it's a bit of a mixed bag that we've had on the program so far. Coming up, remember that we have got tickets to Victorian Opera's Sing Your Own Opera to win, so stick around for that. Now, Nessun Dorma, which translates to None Shall Sleep, is from the opera Turandot. The opera is a bit like a game show, really. Princess Turandot, an heir apparent to the Chinese throne, has three riddles. He who can answer the riddles correctly is given the grand prize of her hand in marriage, and thus the throne of China. Unlike Eddie with Turandot, there are no phone-a-friends or lifelines. In fact, those who fail are promptly executed, which is, you know, not what you'll be looking for. So it's her own way, really, of protecting herself from being pawned off to a man, you see, because she doesn't really want to marry. And you can't blame her, really, with all these men coming up and ringing her gong. Now, the people of China, however, see it as a different sort of, from a different point of view, that they see her as an ice-cold, frigid princess. Caliph, an unknown prince, goes for the challenge, answers all questions, and when Turandot goes back on her word when he gets them all right, he poses his own riddle, which is where Nessun Dorma comes in. If Turandot can find out his name, what his name is, she wins and he dies. If she can't, she has to live up to her promise and marry him. So none shall sleep until she finds his name, while Calf is confident that he will win. Vinciro! Opera Queensland recently put on the amazing Graham Murphy production, and I caught up with American soprano Cynthia McCreese, who played Turandot, a very tall Turandot, I should add. This is the highlights of my interview with her. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Cynthia McCreese is known for her wonderful interpretations of some of opera's most intriguing and difficult heroines. She debuted as the tragic Tosca, is well known for her seductive Salome, and came to international acclaim as cruel Lady Macbeth. Cynthia is powerful, thrilling, highly emotive, and subsequently in great demand, having performed in all the corners of the world. From London to Tokyo to Rio de Janeiro, Cynthia was recently in Australia to perform Turandot. Cynthia, thanks for joining me on the show.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Now, in this version by Graham Murphy, which is absolutely amazing, Turandot literally towers above the people of Peking. Cynthia, before you came to Australia, did you have any idea what they were going to make you do?
Well, no, actually, I hadn't the vaguest idea, no. I'd worked with Graham once before. I did Salome with him in Melbourne, I think 15 years ago. So I knew of his extremely high standards. I knew how demanding he was and what a perfectionist. So I was somewhat prepared.
What is it that you're actually on, that they're spinning you around on?
Well, this is very high tech. It's just a cart. It has some extremely skilled dancers underneath.
It must be difficult to be singing so high up as well.
I would have thought so. I would have thought so, but, you know, she's so cool and she's so isolated. And also, I have to wait backstage all strapped into this with people sort of fussing with my dresses and things. And for me, it's quite a nice entry into the character, particularly in this production, obviously, because I get this kind of extra victimhood. It's like, oh, here I am being carted out once again.
Yeah.
So actually, it's a nice preparation. I don't mind it at all.
So you're not afraid of heights then?
No, not up until now.
The Brisbane Courier Mail has reported that you have a mission to sing the big, mean women in opera and to find the human qualities in them. Turandot must be one of the meanest women that you've played.
My lot, and sort of started to enjoy it, so yes.
Okay.
Well, you know, when I started to look at the role, I thought, no, she's very boring because she's got one color. It's just, she's cruel, she's mean, there's nothing to her besides that. But when I really started to rehearse it, I absolutely fell in love with her because ideally, you know, I don't know if I always can do this, but ideally, I would play her very young and very fragile with a lot of external power. And she's misunderstood by everyone, including by herself. she's pretty much locked in a little prison where she has very few choices, even though she's apparently a very powerful person, but she has almost no choices. From the outside world and from her inside workings, she's got even fewer choices. So I do sympathize with her a lot.
And what about towards the end?
This is the interesting thing, mm-hmm. I think, that Turandot thinks she's cold. Everyone thinks she's cold. But she's got so much inner fire that she is almost like a volcano, out of control. So the longer she tells the story, the more she gets associated with it, the more involved she gets, the more she identifies with it. And something about this man standing in front of her, defying her, makes her even more fiery. So by the time she gets to the end of the aria, she is just explosive and living this story and feeling the feelings and challenging him. And when he challenges her back, it's just, it's like the War of the Titans. You can imagine what kind of marriage this is going to be. It's not going to be easy for either one.
When you're singing, do you keep emotions at bay or do you actually like to experience them?
I like to indulge in them. Okay. Now, there are things where you absolutely have to, you know, stop. I have to stop myself. I used to sing Violetta very, very often. And I used to sing Butterfly, if you can imagine that. And really, the emotions will become so overwhelming that, you know, you can't sing anymore, so then you have to stop. But basically, I like emotions.
Are they any different when you're singing opposite your husband, Remo Cerca?
Well, yes, obviously. If he could hear this interview, I would have to say, oh my God, yes, much better. Well, we suit each other in private life, so obviously there's something about our temperaments that suits each other. And it's an easy match, and of course I trust him, I know what to expect. But you don't have to be personally involved with a partner to make things work on stage. I mean, it has a lot to do with fantasy, of course, and both people playing the same game.
You're on Joy 94.9, this is The Fool and the Opera. I'm Dan Vo, hello! Now, In Questo Regia with Cynthia Macris from the album Luminous Cynthia was what you heard just before. Thanks to Michael for lending me that track from his library. You can check out the pictures from the opera production of Turandot as directed by Graham Murphy on the program blog at joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera. And while you're there, why not have a poke around? And there's plenty of reviews and pictures and previews for you to keep you busy for a while. So just have a play around there. Coming up, there's a chance to win tickets to Victorian Opera's Sing Your Own Opera, The Messiah, coming this Saturday at BMW Edge. Meanwhile, we will be continuing with our interview with Cynthia. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
A musicologist, Joseph Kerman, in critiquing the opera as a flawed drama, wrote that Turandot's surrender at the end has no motivation except the physical. As Turandot, do you disagree with that?
Absolutely. 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 I think the first melting of Turandot is when Calaf has won fair and square, and it was a tough game, and he won fair and square, and he shows this incredibly soft, vulnerable side of himself because he feels her vulnerability. He actually feels it, and she responds. Something in her just opens and starts to melt when he says, okay, I'll give you a chance, guess my name. And if you get it, then I'll die. It just, something in her melts. So I think that's maybe 90% of what happens.
You've played a lot of Puccini women, Strauss women, and Verdi women. You've got the tragic side versus the big, mean women side. What actually appeals to you most?
You know, I actually love both. When I was studying, I wanted to be a history professor. I lost interest in music because I was too interested in everything else. But I would write my history papers listening to La Forza del Destino and Norma. So obviously the tragic side is the most interesting to me. I have to say that.
You said that you lost interest for a while in music. What music do you actually like? You know, what sort of music is in your head when you're not on stage?
Wow, I like a lot of different things.
Yeah?
I like so many different things that I must say this job has been really good for me because it's a job where you absolutely have to focus on one thing. So I very often do not have any music playing when I'm by myself because I like to get some inner peace and let the music that I'm either learning or performing kind of settle inside, go into my blood.
Mm. You said that you like to find peace. Meditation and yoga are very important to you, aren't they?
Yes, I absolutely swear by meditation. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Gives me focus, gets rid of a lot of the distractions. I actually do believe that, you know, there's a little bit more to life than just the material world that we have around us. So, yeah, it's kind of a mission also.
Okay, well, let's go back for a moment. Back to the age of 6 when you dreamed of being a wrestler.
Yeah, right. Well... Yeah, okay. So anyway, you're helping me bring this together. Basically, the tragic, the helpless, the waiting for somebody to help her out of a situation, I would say that would be most of my personality. So most of my little girlhood, I was spent, you know, pretending I was a princess and somebody was going to rescue me, pretty much. But there was this underlying strain of wanting strength. So thinking, oh, I'd be an athlete and I could do anything physically. So there was that. And I wasn't athletic, but there was that desire to be strong.
In many ways, singing opera is a very athletic art anyway.
Oh, God, yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Well, I thought, you know, being a wrestler would give you an unfair advantage over Scarpia in Tosca.
Haven't you seen those performances? This humongous woman in Scarpia is the poor little guy. You cannot possibly understand how he's not winning. Yes.
I've read that you played the piano as a child, and this is where you feel that you learnt discipline.
I played the piano as a child. I think I learned discipline in piano first when I got to college, and I had a really tough teacher, and then I made amazing progress. I needed discipline from the outside. I definitely needed discipline from the outside. I lived in Germany for many years. That definitely did give me discipline also. Now I've internalized it. I really have this motor drive in me that can focus and, you know, do what I want to do.
Can you tell me what your first opera experience was? Do you remember it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I grew up in a tiny town where there was, you know, there was music. I did everything that was involved with music that was available to me because it was my love. But I didn't hear anything from an opera until I was 20 years old, and I heard another student singing Pace Pace, and I was just lost. That was it for me. So there was no turning back after that.
This inspired you to do singing as a career?
Yeah, it was just, I had to do it. I just had to do it. I really didn't have a choice about it. I just had to do it. I think it was the emotions that I went through when I heard that.
You teach now as well.
I absolutely adore teaching. It's just so lovely to feel competent and to watch people become empowered. I guess that's why I like teaching.
What advice would you give to aspiring students?
I would give this advice to anyone who really wants to sing, that recognize if it's your first priority or not, because you may have to leave your homeland. It seems to work out better. It's been my experience. Other people have other experiences.
Mm. Well, with the leaving, there is always this the joy of coming back.
That's right. And being much more valued when you come back.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure, Cynthia.
Thank you, Dan. This has been really fun.
You're on The Fool in the Opera with Dan Vo, and you've just heard our interview highlights with Cynthia McCreese. There is an exclusive extended version of that interview available through the Joy website, joy.org.au/The Fool in the Opera. You'll be able to access that tomorrow at a relatively nondescript time. Thanks very much to Jed Gilbert for putting the audio production work into that one. Thanks very much, Jed. Now, your chance to win big. If you're a Joy member, give me a call on 9699 2949, and you can get a double pass to Victorian Opera's Sing Your Own Opera, The Messiah. Call me now. First caller, 96992949. Maestro Richard Gill and Head of Music of Victorian Opera David McSkimming will lead the rehearsals where the average punter, like you and me, will get to join the ranks of the ensemble and try to outsing each other. With Opera Orchestra Victoria providing the accompaniment for the grand finale performance, it's kind of like group karaoke, only a little bit classier. Plus, so it doesn't become a ridiculous disaster, soprano Melanie Adams and Spunko, Anthony Mackie, will also be there to show you how it's really done. In other Victorian opera news, Lucy Shorrox was announced as the new managing director, taking over from acting managing director Mary Valentine, who took over from Anne Frankenberg, the company's inaugural managing director, who left the company earlier this year expecting her second child. You can check out the details again at the blog on the Joy website. Meanwhile, Victorian Opera's Sing Your Own Opera, The Messiah, is on this Saturday at 2 o'clock, so give me a call if you'd like to win tickets. It's 96992949. To get you in the mood, I thought, why not play you a bit of a sample of what you'll be taught to sing? Hallelujah on The Fool and the Opera from The Messiah. And if you want to hear the rest of that, well, you can come down on Saturday to BMW Edge, where they will be having Sing Your Own Opera, thanks to the Victorian Opera. So we've got a winner. It's Jonathan from Roeville, who has won tickets to see Sing Your Own Opera. And I do hope that if you come along, bring your kids, because somebody's going to sing those high notes, and it's certainly not going to be me. Now, Jeff's just sent an SMS in, and he says, "You are good on radio. I've never heard you before." Thanks, Jeff. I don't know about that. And Jonathan's also sent in a message as well, saying about the very first song that we played, the intro theme. It is Eleanor Katz-Chernin with Wild Swans from Greenleaf. Greenleaf from Wild Swans, rather. So that's the song. So I'm glad you enjoyed that as well. Now, that's Victorian Opera's Sing Your Own Opera of The Messiah, where you can learn to sing as well as learn a new language while you're singing. Now, if you're not a member, you might as well become one, because while I have the Orchestra of Angels in the studio, I'm going to pray that you join. Now is the time to join your hands and give thanks to the wonderful work that Joy volunteers do throughout the year to produce 365 days of great radio for you. Plus, right now we're doing our Joy 94.9 Declare It in December campaign, so there'll be heaps of great rewards that you can win, including new iPod Nanos. Not that you need those sort of temptations, you know, just the good feeling that you feel in your heart from becoming a member and supporting this great radio station is reward enough, really. 96992949 is the number to call. Now, just seeing as we're being followed by a jazz show right after this, I thought it'd be fun to end each show with something a bit jazzier. And it wasn't until I started looking for some jazzy opera that I realised how bloody difficult it is. But a challenge wouldn't be a challenge unless it was hard. So I'm up for it. So this week, I've got you, because we've been talking so much about Turandot, I've got you a piece called Sleepless in the Night by the Opera Big Band. And it's a bit of a fun track. And see if you can, you know, hear the theme coming from it, as well as, you know, all the subtle jazzy nuances that they add to it. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Sleepless in the Night with the Opera Big Band and Antti Saapela. That's on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Now, hopefully that's put you into a bit of a jazzy mood and prepared you for Katie with Bent Notes. So stick around for that. Next week, Brian Castle's Onion talks about the crazy behind-the-scenes world of opera. We're going to have a bit of a Christmas theming on the show with an operatic twist, of course, and plenty of opera, both traditional and remixed. Before I say goodbye, I've got two messages in from two anonymous people, but I thought I'd say hi to you anyway. Thanks very much for listening to the show and for texting and for your support. Thank you so much for joining me today. Now, remember, there's plenty of updates throughout the week at the blog. That's joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera. This has been The Fool and the Opera. Join me again next week, and as Hanel would say, same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9 Community Radio. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert, thanks to the support of Joy sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.